So, as I was saying, it's the new calendar year. It's January 7th, 2024. I don't know how many of you have written 2023 and stuff in the last few days. I know I have. And so we take stock, right? It's an opportunity to kind of recommit to assess, evaluate, wow, how was the last year? This periodicity gives us this moment of pause, if you will, this moment of reflection. How was last year? Was it, how was it in particular to a specific thing? Maybe we were, there's something we want to, we would have wanted to have done last year. And so we may reflect on how did I do with that? And then maybe recommit to the next year, this next 365 days. Okay, I'm going to do it like this year. And so these moments of renewal, if you will, recommitment, they're wonderful, and they also shouldn't be clamped on too tightly, because it's not like that. It's not the intention. As I shared earlier this week, in another space which some of you are at, this opportunity to start afresh, begin anew. In our tradition, or in our Buddhist practice, we say every breath is the opportunity to start over, to begin anew, right? There's even a teaching in the sutras that say the Buddha asked the monks, what's that periodicity? And different monks offered a year, a month, a day, half a day, and then he said none of those are true. The opportunity to begin a new lifetime is actually in a breath in and a breath out. That was the correct response. A breath in and a breath out signifies the beginning, another opportunity. It's another life we've been offered to begin anew again and again and again. So I think it's actually a very compassionate practice, if you think about it, because it's saying that every breath in and every breath out, we get to start over. So we're not holding onto something, oh, that was so bad, perseverating and beating ourselves up like we like to do. No, it's this breath in of acknowledgement and this breath out of release, and then we start again with the next breath, which is so compassionate. It's such a compassionate practice. And so this is where we're at in this opportunity in the calendar year. It's a human constructed time period, right? Just so happens to be the 365 days start at this point. We orbit around the sun, right? And we take perspective. In fact, we might even want to think about the astronauts when they went to the moon, and their reflection back was that when they went out like that and they could see this Earth, how small everything seemed when all you could see from such a distance is this Earth, this thing we call Earth, this planet Earth, relative to another planet in the universal system that we're part of. And only when they were so far away could they get that perspective. Because otherwise, we're kind of sitting on this earth in our life form, in this life form, in the shelter, whichever type of shelter we're in this particular job or school or home. And we think we're the only one that we're isolated, that we're separate. And yet it's not so, is it? If we were all to get into a spaceship and go out into space and look back, we would likely have the same kind of perspective as the astronaut. When we see that we're part of this huge universe, all these other planets. And I think this opportunity to begin anew is a bit of a moment of perspective, a moment of maybe a little jolt into the reality that just who we are as part of a collection of humanoids, human species, as part of a collection of beings, all kinds of beings, plant, animals, minerals, and as a collection on this particular planet, relative to other planets, Mars and the other ones, and we happen to be on this one, on this particular planet, and that's wonderful. And so we're actually a part of something much bigger, and I think the resetting our perspective and recommitting to what is the most important thing is really a good thing in the new year. This opportunity to come back into the perspective of now, of like, wow, I just woke up to the idea that I am part of something much bigger. What is it that prevents us from being able to come back to now again and again? What is it that prevents that renewal, that refreshing, that coming back to this idea, this understanding that every new breath is an opportunity to come back to that, to come present to the now. So what prevents us from that, right? Well, why does it require these kind of hallmarky annotation in order for us to come back to, oh yeah, it's Mother's Day now, let me remember my mother or my parent. These kinds of reminders that we have that brings us to that moment of aha again. What is it that prevents us from being more able to be present with these things that are actually very important to us, right? What gets in the way? Yeah, what gets in the way of that? And then, so there's what gets in the way of that, and then what gets in the way of making that change, right? So once we identify what is it that gets in the way, then the next step is what gets in the way of changing that, of removing that thing that hinders us, or those things that hinder us from being able to be again, continuously waking up, you know, like what, you know, the how do we stay woke phrase, right? I'm sure you've seen that around the last few years, you know. We're all waking up, but then how do we stay woke? Why are people falling back asleep? We all do that. And so these times, these kind of periodicity, marked periodicities, anniversary updates, things like this, that's what these things remind us to wake up again to that thing or this thing. And so what is it that prevents us from remembering? And then what do we do? So this is very normal, right? We all do this. We all have habits. Our habits, we're habituated to, you know, our daily lives, the way we wake up. The mind immediately goes to what it is that I have to do today. And the mind is off, you know, it's off to the races. This race of, you know, being in this body and what we feel we must do to be in this world. So We have our customary ways and responses to the day. And before you know it, it's the end of the year. You know, maybe there were a couple moments in there. Maybe we were able to go on a vacation, or maybe we were able to, there was a moment or moments where we were able to stop and actually not habituate, because maybe we were away from our daily routines. So that was like another waking up moment. And so then it shifted the daily habitual patterns. And then we existed like that for that week or that 2 weeks or something like that. And then we went back into the, you know, the grime, as we say, right? And so how can we do this different? How can we not reflect on it and aspire for it differently this year and next year, 2025, as we gather together as BBMC, not have the same reflection of where did the year go and how did we do differently? Yeah, because we know that every moment, again, every breath moment is an opportunity to come back again and to wake up again. It's another life. Nothing is guaranteed. Not even the next breath is promised. And so every new breath that we have then is this gift. We've been gifted another moment. And so what do we do with this gift of life? Do we step into that moment of now? Do we step into that change that we want to embody? Or do we, in the next breath, go back to habitual tendencies, habitual thoughts and habitual behaviors that come from the thoughts, the mind? So in Buddhism, it's all about identifying the things that hinder us, what we want to identify the hindrances so that we can change them and step into that moment of waking up, those continual moments of waking up. And so if you think about many of the teachings in Buddhism, like if you think about the precepts, the five precepts, which in our tradition we call the five mindfulness trainings, if you notice, they're all don't kill, don't steal, don't commit sexual misconduct, don't use wrong speech, you know, lying, gossiping, etc., and don't take intoxicants, right? It's a lot of don't do these things. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. If you think about the five hindrances, which is a teaching of these are the things that hinder us from our awakening, right? What are the five hindrances? Anybody want to remind us what are the five hindrances? Or one of them? Or two of them?
Anger.
What is it? So I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Doubt, anger, sloth, torpor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Right, three of those. Those are three of the five. Anyone else want to?
Restlessness.
Yeah. Very good. Restlessness, and one more. Craving or grasping, right? Greed. So the anger is the ill will, or that can become hatred. And the doubt, the delusion that we kind of live not knowing sometimes, doubting, and the torpor, the sloth and torpor, the kind of I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe I'm take a nap first, or that's a lot. And then the restlessness, the agitation, the distracted mind that jumps from one thing to the next, even the anxiety, right? It's an anxiety as well, right? It's like, what am I going to do? The mind isn't settled. And then the grasping, the greed, the craving, the continuous craving for sensual pleasures and and things that the eyes want to go after, and the ears wants to hear, grasp another sound, and the nose wants to smell another odor to kind of stimulate itself, because we have such a resistance to pausing and settling, coming inside. And we have such a need for going outside of ourselves and satiating ourselves with these externals, to the external senses. But you see, they're framed in the negative, right? The hindrances. Yeah. So these things are there. And what I'd like to suggest is that what we might want to do is think about, especially at the beginning of this year, is how do we build a foundation that can hold this looking and this acknowledging and this ability to reflect and change? How do we build something to hold that, right? Sort of create the soil, if you will, that can grow the things that we want to grow to counteract the hindrances, to commit to life, right? So the first precept is no killing. And so what's the antidote to no killing is nourishing and supporting life, right? So how do we build a foundation that really helps us to do those, the antidotes to those things, right? So I was reflecting on this the last couple of days, and so in Japanese acupuncture, when you're trained in Japanese acupuncture, it's a little different than Chinese acupuncture. So in Japanese acupuncture, you always treat about 5 points in the body, these general 5 points in the body, before you actually treat the acute illness that the person is coming in for. And the reasoning and the theory and the practice of that is that you have to prepare the body, the big organs of the body. You have to prepare them to receive the treatment for the acute illness, because there's this, it's sort of a foundational understanding that these particular organs need to be moving into balance again, in order, and even if you treat these foundational organ systems, right, which we know are different from Western understanding of the organ systems, but it's not to try to get into that, the understanding of acupuncture and the organ systems. It's really trying to say that there's a wisdom in the understanding that if you get the soil right, then it can receive what it is that you're trying to address that's coming up acutely. So you treat the kidney meridian, yeah, you treat the liver and the immune system, yeah, and you treat the stomach meridian. And the understanding is, when you treat these meridians, that there's something that starts to shift the whole system toward balance. And then you needle the point specific for the illness that the person came in to see you for. Now, this is a very wonderful, in my humble opinion, this is a very wonderful way to think about what is it that we need to do in our lives to most best prepare us to practice on this path of waking up. Yeah. What is it that helps us to be able to more readily and easily see, oh, this is what I want to do to stay on my path, to help us with these habitual tendencies that we all have, that's, you know, as we say, we gained it legally. Either we learned it from our ancestors, right? Or they were things that we, you know, our personalities that developed out of particular interactions we had as children. So for some people, we say some of the sufferings we had as children, we responded to those, and in the response to the engagements we were involved in as children, we become who we are. But now we're not those children anymore, right? We're grown, as they say. And so we might want to take a look at these habitual tendencies, the way the mind immediately goes to some things and then the behavior follows. And so in doing that, how do we create a foundation that more readily invites us into that? Yeah. And so this could be very simple. So these things I shared earlier this week. So there's seven things, and I want to go into them a little bit more. So one of them is self-compassion. So most of us don't have a lot of self-compassion. It's just not something. And I want to say that as folks of color, you know, we really want to really almost overdevelop this muscle of self-compassion. Honestly, it is an underdeveloped muscle, okay? And we really want to really honestly think about how can we be more compassionate with ourselves, yeah? Like if we, after this sit, and we go out and we do exactly the thing in the sit that we say we're not going to do anymore this year, like how can we just like laugh and say, it's okay, there's another breath, there's another day, and I'll begin anew with it then. And let it go. I mean, honestly, let it go, and then let it build on top of the mountain already inside of us that we want to keep growing bigger as far as not being compassionate to ourselves, of self-blame, of shame, of guilt, right? And not to mention that's our own. I mean, we've got enough stuff coming in from the outside that wants to build those mountains in us. We don't need to do that. So this self-compassion muscle is something that I think, it's also compassion, you know, it's this in Buddhism. In Zen Buddhism, it's understood as the way of the bodhicitta. It's the way of the bodhisattva, compassion is, yeah? Compassion is understood as opening, spaciousness. It's understood as this way of creating the openness that we need in order to be able to be on this path of realization. And it has to start with ourselves, right? And as folks of color, we really want to build that muscle up. You know, we want to like, you know, we want like that. That's what we want. We want big muscles of self-compassion. Yeah, big muscle. We want to flex those babies. Yeah, we really, really do. Not be ashamed of it. So this is one of the foundational things that we want to continuously do to stay with our soil so that we stay on this path, so that we continuously see, oh yeah, I'm doing this. I don't want to do this anymore. So the second one is the indifference that we have towards others, the other, right? The indifference that we have towards others. This perceived fact in our mind that everybody's different than us, that we're isolated, and how do we remove that perceived separateness, right? So Pema Chodron, who teaches a lot about compassion and the Bodhisattva path, talks about removing the veil of separateness by finding the thing we have common with each other. So the first thing we usually do is we find the things that separate us. And we can always find something that separates us just by looking at another individual. We can start with the external factors. Oh, look, their hair is different, their clothing is different, their nose is different, their whatever. We can always go to difference. And so this understanding that starting to try to identify the thing that we have in common is really part of removing this separation that exists in us and starts to bring us together, starts to open us on this path. So the exercise of going into a crowded space and looking at someone and saying, just like me, I know this person wants to be happy. Because we may not know anything else about this person, but what we can know is that the person, that everyone wants to be happy, everybody wants to be healthy. There are very few people, unless there's some, you know, some kind of organic illness going on, who exist saying, I want to be unhappy or I want to be unhealthy. And so this understanding of seeing, you know, I just like me, I don't want to hurt. That person doesn't want to hurt. So I was doing this practice several months ago when I was driving down, identifying everyone in trucks on the highway. And I'd say, just like me, that driver doesn't want to be happy. And then I'd see another truck. One day I'd say, I do it with all the red cars or the red trucks. You know, it was kind of like this exercise of making myself start to really see the similarity in people that I have no clue of. I will never, ever know. I will never know who they are, where they live, where they came from. And yet, what I do know is that person driving down in that red semi, what I do know is he or she wants to be happy. And so these kinds of practices, they help us to start to identify similarities with others and starts to break down the way the mind quickly goes to what is different from me and you. Because we can always find difference. And in the same time, we can always find something similar. Okay, so the next one is joy. So I asked my mom when I was home in New Orleans, what brings you joy? Because I could see she was not having a lot of joy in her life in the last years. And this understanding, this even questioning ourselves, no one had asked her that before. So even the question of ourselves, what brings us joy, is already an opening. So for some people, joy is contentment. Joy is feeling rested in something. Joy is feeling there's no more doing to be had here. So it's a not doing. For some, it's seeing the face of a child smile, and is without even thought, a smile arises on our face. Or seeing a sunset, or hearing our name called by someone we care about, or a particular kind of food. But what is it that brings us joy? And a joy that doesn't harm someone else. Yeah. So it's a joy that actually, because we're having it, someone else didn't suffer for that. And then stress. So, you know, stress is one of those things that we hear a lot about. And there's two ways I want us to think about stress. Stress as there's good stress. You know, sometimes we understand stress gets us moving. You know, a little bit of like, wow, I got to do this. I got to get this done as a timeline. And it actually gets us moving, gets us, propels us. It focuses the mind. I'm a bit like that. Focuses my mind. I have a deadline. Now all of a sudden it's like things come together more clearly. I'm on it, right? So some of that stress that gets us into getting something done that we need done, but then there's there where it becomes too much. It moves over and it starts moving into extreme. And so then when we start getting into that imbalance type of stress, how do we take care of that? Can we start to notice the habitual tendencies? What do we do? Do we eat something that maybe if we weren't stressed, we wouldn't do? Do we get on the telephone, the device, and start scrolling? Do we get on Netflix? Do we have to talk? Whatever it is for us, there's ways that we are habitually responding to things that we feel moves us out of our space of contentment, out of our space of feeling we know we got this. And so it's not that any of that is bad. It's just that when it gets to be too much, where we're hiding from the looking into it, looking into how we habitually respond. So being able to notice why, and then being able to think about how we're responding. So what caused the stress? How are we responding to it? What's the habitual way we respond to that? And then what do we want to do different? Is that how we want to respond? Okay. Or maybe there's a different way. Maybe this isn't so healthy. So how might I respond differently to this? Because this is our process of waking up, right? This is like moving away from habitual tendencies, right? Okay. And then these other three might seem kind of the typical mundane things. Nutrition. So it's not just nutrition of food, though, right? In the Buddhist context, we're talking about nutrition. What are we consuming? What are we feeding ourselves, our sense doors? So it's not just food, edible foods. It's sense impressions, right? How are we, where are we putting ourselves? The eyes and the ears and the nose, this is all ways that we feed the body and the mind. The mind, what are we reading? What are we watching on Netflix, whatever? What are we binging on? Who are we listening to? What words are we hearing in songs? Does it water our seas of violence? So what are we consuming? What's our volition, right? That's the third kind of nutriment. What are we intending? Because when we intend with the mind and we carry it out, and once we intend something, we start to create karma. So just the thinking alone creates a new karma, right? So what are we able to notice that? The next one is is rest or sleep, or we can even interpret that as pausing, because see, it's the pausing and the rest that allows the mind to settle and for us to begin to notice. And that noticing helps us to see what is it that we're feeding ourselves. It catches that momentary thought we had in reacting to something that made us uncomfortable. It catches it. And in that catching it is the acknowledgement of whether or not that's what we want to continue to have. So that pause, the resting of mind and body, the good rest, right? The sleep that goes deeply, so that we can actually, you know, that early morning wake when it's very quiet in the mind still, because it hasn't been bombarded by, it hasn't been consuming through all the sense doors. That's the moment, those are the moments when we actually notice what is actually here. And whatever we do, however we pause, meditation is one, right? The breathing, the following the breath, so we bring calm to body and mind, and we can start to see the ripples that are actually there. Because sometimes the ripples you can't see because there's so many waves, right? There's so much consumption going on. And then the last one is movement. So movement is really important. You know, as Carlotta mentioned, the things that get stuck, that we... In when we are not able to move, and which is it's a privilege to be able to move, right? I watch my mom again when I see her, and and see how she's less able to move, how difficult it is for her to accept that, how she's grieving. She's grieving the loss of something, and that's the loss of movement, right? And it's a grieving. It's just like losing someone. You lose the ability of your body to move in the way it used to move. And so it's a privilege for us, for those of us who are still able to move quite easily without much thought, right? To not have to hold on to something and push off of it to stand and to sit in that same way. So the more we move, the more we move. And the less we move, the less we move. And things get stuck. And things get stuck. And so the movement, whether it's shaking like we do, whether it's stretching, whether it's whatever it is, whatever we call it, exercise, movement, playing ball, jump roping, yoga, qigong, walking, running, biking, whatever. There's no limit. Dancing, all of that. How do we move this body so that we're helping to create that spaciousness, that flow, so that when things impinge upon us, they don't get stuck on things that are already stuck and growing, but it's able to more easily move through the body, yeah, and move through the mind, yeah. So I'll stop there. The idea is to use these seven ways of moving through our day and create a foundation that can more easily realize I'm in a moment now. What am I choosing to do and be in this moment? Can I be awake and know in this moment how I'm showing up? Yeah. So how we prepare so that happens more easily. And we're not in another year wondering, what happened? Wow, the year just went by. So let's figure out how we, you know, take any one of these and maybe for a month practice with them or whatever, three of them or however you want to mix it up, or a week at a time. But how do we really create a different set of fundamental building blocks in this foundation of who we are? Because we're not the child anymore who developed from their interactions. Some of them are wonderful. Some of them, there were responses to exaggerated conditions that aren't here anymore. And so we're rebuilding our home, our foundation. And we're building it so that it can be fully present now, and to see more clearly how this heart mind wants to be in this world. How do we want to continue to wake up? Because we want to wake up. So here's to us all continuing this spiritual path together, friends along this path, and continuously helping each other in our community, in this very noble and important community, beautiful community, to wake up together. Thank you. And let us enjoy a bell and let all that go.